Chapter 11. Selling Your Soul to Hollywood and Probably the CIA. This might be the most disturbing chapter of the entire book. I understand that people want to skip this chapter because there are some dark places you don't want your mind to go. But as a Christian man, a truth teller to the best of my ability, I would be remiss if I didn't write this chapter. I started off innocent, like everybody else, making my way in the media business and trying to get noticed. And when that happened, took meetings with people who were higher up on the food chain than me. One of the people I met early on was film director Richard Linklater, a fellow Texan, probably best known for putting a young Matthew McConaughey in his feature Dazed and Confused, about high school stoner culture. Rick is a great guy, not a part of Hollywood, and he put me in two of his films, Waking Life, 2001, and A Scanner Darkly, 2007, with Keanu Reeves, Robert Downey Jr., Woody Harrelson, and Winona Ryder. If you want to understand how little I've changed over the years, here's my speech from Waking Life in 2001. Just as the George W. Bush presidency was beginning. You can't fight City Hall, death and taxes. Don't talk about politics or religion. This is all the equivalent of enemy propaganda, rolling across the picket line. Lay down, G.I., lay down, G.I. We saw it all through the 20th century. And now, in the 21st century, it's time to stand up and realize that we should not allow ourselves to be crammed into this rat maze. We should not submit to this dehumanization. I don't know about you, but I'm concerned with what's happening in this world. I'm concerned with the structure. I'm concerned with the systems of control. Those that control my life and those that seek to control it even more. I want freedom. That's what I want, and that's what you should want. It's up to each and every one of us to break loose of just some of the greed, the hatred, the envy, and yes, the insecurities, because that is the central mode of control. Make us feel pathetic, small, so we'll willingly give up our sovereignty, our liberty, our destiny. We have got to realize we're being conditioned on a mass scale. Start challenging this corporate slave state. The 21st century is going to be a new century, not the century of slavery, not the century of lies and issues of no significance, and all the rest of the modes of control. It's going to be the age of humankind, standing up for something pure and right. What a bunch of garbage, liberal, democratic, conservative, Republican. It's all there to control you. Two sides of the same coin, two management teams, bidding for control of the CEO job of Slavery Incorporated. The truth is out there in front of you, but they lay out the buffet of lies. I'm sick of it, and I'm not going to take a bite out of it. Do you got me? Resistance is not futile. We're going to win this thing. Humankind is too good. We're not a bunch of underachievers. We're going to stand up, and we're going to be human beings. We're going to get fired up about the real things, the things that matter. Creativity and the dynamic human spirit that refuses to submit. Well, that's all I've got to say. It's in your court now. It doesn't really seem like I've changed much over the years, does it? This is when the left really loved me. A Scanner Darkly, released in 2007, after 9/11, and the massive civil liberty violations of the Patriot Act, was based on a Philip K. Dick novel about a near-future dystopia of drugs, paranoia, and surveillance. The plot centered on a suit an individual could wear to make them invisible to governmental surveillance. In the story, a quarter of the population were addicts, and this provided an excuse for the government to crack down on its citizens. That gave me something of a foothold in Hollywood, as many considered my work to be an indictment of George W. Bush's Patriot Act and the Global War on Terror, which it was. In 2005, I was seen as being allied with the left, and one of my anti-war documentaries, Martial Law 9/11, Rise of the Police State, was brought to the attention of the actor Emilio Estevez. He brought it to the attention of his brother, Charlie Sheen, and their father, Martin Sheen. Charlie Sheen called and told me, "I'd like you to fly out to California," and I accepted. What they were most interested in was my publicly challenging various aspects of the 9/11 story, particularly the fall of Building 7. That video was attracting hundreds of millions of views. I'd tangled with George W. Bush when he was governor of Texas, and when Bush was president, I'd raised questions about 9/11, the war on terror, and the plans of the neocons to invade countries all across the Middle East under the sponsorship of Vice President Dick Cheney, whom I considered to be one of the most villainous men to ever occupy high office in this country. I arrived at Martin Sheen's house in Malibu and was greeted warmly by him and his wife. Martin put on my anti-war documentary so we could watch it together, and in the first few minutes, he told me how much he appreciated my work. I'm as vulnerable to flattery as the next guy, and here I'm being praised by the lead actor of one of my favorite films, Apocalypse Now, who also did a great job playing the fictional President of the United States, Josiah Bartlett, in the Emmy Award-winning series The West Wing. It was pretty heady stuff. After maybe a half hour, the actor Anthony Hopkins arrived, as well as Sheen's two sons, Charlie and Emilio Estevez. They all sat down to watch the documentary, and I was praised by these people like I was the belle of the ball. For some reason, Charlie Sheen seemed to really like me, offering to fly me out again to California so I could stay at his house. At that time, Charlie was dating actress Denise Richards and wasn't on drugs, but he was a chain smoker. Hollywood really is its own private little club, but with the approval of the Sheen family, I was granted access to it. Later, Charlie flew me out to California and had me stay at his house. While I was there, he said to me, "Hey, Alex, I want some Taco Bell. Take the Porsche down the hill and get me some things." I took the Porsche, but the damned thing was so powerful it scared me, and halfway down the hill I turned back around. He looked confused when I came back so quickly, so I said, "Let me take another car. I can't drive that. It'll kill me." Charlie would later appear on my show and cause some controversy for himself. Charlie was always good to me, and over the years, I've tried to counsel him, not very successfully, on some of his issues. Because I was new to Hollywood, fresh meat, I got taken behind the curtain by several people to tell me the way things genuinely worked, but not the Sheens. At that point, I already knew many iconic people in Hollywood, and I was catapulted into having access to some of the A-list of Hollywood actors. I didn't like what I found. It was worse than the rumors I'd heard. I went to dinner with Buzz Aldrin, the second man to walk on the moon, and he told me all about aliens on our nearest celestial body, our secret bases, and obelisks that hadn't yet been revealed to the public. Another thing that struck me as odd at the time was Aldrin's claim that we knew there was water on the moon, but we weren't going to let the Indians discover it. Yet, in 2009, that's exactly what happened, as reported by The Guardian. An Indian space mission claims to have found water on the moon, raising hopes that a manned base could be established there within the next two decades. It had been widely believed that the moon was dry, but data from India's Chandrayaan-1 mission allegedly found clear evidence of water there, apparently concentrated at the poles and possibly formed by the solar wind. What's more, water still appears to be forming, advancing the possibility that human life could be sustained there. Scientists hope that astronauts could one day not only drink the water, but extract oxygen from it to breathe and hydrogen to use as fuel. I remember being in an airport in 2009 when I saw the headline on a newspaper about water on the moon, picked it up, and read through it. I thought to myself, this is absolute bullshit. According to Aldrin, we've already got bases up there. I'm not much of an alien guy. That's more Joe Rogan's territory than mine. But I've got a pretty good bullshit detector in me. And when I have had alien investigators on my show, like Dr. Stephen Greer, they've always impressed me with their thoroughness and care in distinguishing between what they know and what they suspect. If you woke me up in the middle of the night and asked if I was scared of aliens, I'd tell you I'm far more scared of human monsters than aliens, and then turn over and go back to sleep. I was getting to know all these other Hollywood people, going on TV shows, and doing some reality TV shows about conspiracies. One pattern I've noticed is that whatever side feels out of power is much more willing to consider conspiracy corruption theories. The left loved what I was saying about the Patriot Act and the war on terror when Bush was in office, but not so much when Barack Obama took office. And some of these new people I was getting to know started to tell me about the real shape of power in Hollywood. They told me, "You think Hollywood is cool? There are three groups here. First, there are the people who come here to make money and trying to live outside the system. Second, there are the Scientologists. And third, there are the occult CIA devil worshippers. There are these cults, but they all feed into the larger CIA group. Some of them even brand the women on their bellies." This was long before anybody had heard of the NXIVM sex cult, founded by Keith Raniere in 1998. I was also told that there were these islands where they'd take politicians and scientists, where they'd have sex with underage girls and try to compromise them. And these islands were run by our CIA, the British intelligence agency MI6, and the Israeli Mossad. I heard this story from many entertainers and well-known musicians, as well as others, and it's why a lot of them left the business. But sex was just the entry door. What these powerful entities were genuinely after was to get high-profile individuals to pledge themselves to the devil. My good friend, Mark Dice, has spoken publicly about an incident where he was asked to make such a pledge. Dice was doing well in Hollywood. He's a funny guy. And he'd been offered a major show by the largest reality television group. The head of the company brought Mark into an office and said, "Mark, we want you to pledge yourself to Lucifer." Mark replied, "But I'm a Christian." The company head made a dismissive gesture. "We know you say you are, but let's just get this out of the way." "Is this a joke?" Mark asked. "No, I'm deadly serious," replied the company head. Mark walked out of the room. "I have not been asked to pledge myself to the devil, but there have been offers that I believe were setting me up to eventually be asked that question." One time, a top official of the Kissinger Group out from New York had a meeting with me and my producer, John Harmon. He said, "We want you to come and work for us. We want you to come to New York next week. We've only got a few thousand people in our super class, but we want you to join them. You'll basically lead the populist liberty movement. You'll get to have a seat at the table, but you'll have to do what we tell you. You'll be able to have some input. So your two choices are, you can be on your own crusade, and we'll make sure you fail, or you can join us. All of this was out in the open. You see, this is always the dangle. You'll have more power than you ever believed, but you'll have to be under our control. It doesn't take much of a working brain to understand you're being asked to take the devil's deal. Another time, I had this major executive offer me $10 million a year for a show and multiple books a year. He said, "You just come in and do the show, but we'll control what you do." During the pitch, his wife walks into the executive's swanky office, and she's super beautiful, which I'm sure was the point. The executive looks at his wife, then at me, and says, "I hear you like to have fun. You want to have sex with my wife? She thinks you're hot. What do I need to do? Sex with my wife before or after you sign the contract? Do I need to get down on my knees and beg you to sign this contract?" I must note that this approach, getting down on their knees and begging you, is a common tactic among these people. Once, I had a famous CIA guy making a similar pitch to me, without his wife, and he offered to get down on his knees and beg me to sign the contract he was offering. I guess the idea is, if somebody is down on their knees begging you, it's supposed to make you feel powerful. But you quickly realize it's just a ploy to get the harness around your neck, like you're a plow horse. You're like that rare baseball card they want you to buy and put in their collection. When they see you're on your way up, that's when they make the offer. So they have you when you become popular. You might not believe Alex Jones when I tell you about the CIA in Hollywood. But how about the same story from Oscar-winning director and actor Ben Affleck? In 2012, he directed and starred in a movie called Argo, which told the true story of a 1980 CIA operation to rescue some of our hostages from Iran by smuggling them out as part of a fake Hollywood movie crew. My sources also told me that the CIA regularly puts a few agency members into film crews on location in countries that are of interest to our intelligence agencies. This is from a BBC News article about the film and the true story behind it. Ben Affleck's film Argo tells the bizarre story of how in 1980, the CIA, with Canadian help, sprang a group of Americans from Iran after they escaped a U.S. embassy overrun by protesters. The film, which has received 7 Oscar nominations, including one for Best Picture, is based on real-life events. But how much of it is fiction? When Mark Lejek took Tehran as his first posting in the U.S. Foreign Service, he wasn't opting for an easy life. I was asked to volunteer in October 1978, and things in Iran were already pretty bad, he explains. The movie makes it abundantly clear that the CIA maintains fictional front companies in Hollywood as part of its regular operations. While the movie did take some dramatic license, specifically in heightening the suspense as to whether the Iranian authorities would discover the plan, the movie stuck pretty close to the actual story. The central element of the story sounds incredible, but is in fact true. The CIA cooked up a plan to spirit the 6 out of the country on a scheduled flight from Tehran's Mehrabad Airport, masquerading as Canadians working on a non-existent science fiction film. Mark Lejek recalls that of the group, he was the most immediately enthusiastic. "I thought it had the right amount of pizzazz. Who else but filmmakers would be crazy enough to come to Tehran in the middle of a revolution? I had no problem pretending to be in the movie industry." I think it's important to understand that if our intelligence agencies are never sanctioned in any way for their actions, they will do whatever they want. The CIA is specifically forbidden from operating in the United States. But Argo openly broadcasts that this is a lie. As to what is currently happening in Hollywood, this is from an interview Ben Affleck gave to The Guardian shortly after the movie came out. Ben Affleck: one of the themes of Argo is about storytelling and how powerful it is. From political theater, to the way we communicate with our children, to the way we inspire people. And it's interesting that Hollywood and the clandestine services both spend most of their time convincing people of something that's not true. Hollywood has developed this way of telling stories and oftentimes uses that for philanthropic and political causes, which people may or may not think are good. But there are really positive offshoots. Mostly, I think, self-serving and designed to be that way. But I think some good things do also happen. This is an exceptional example of a good thing happening. Interviewer: are there many actors in Hollywood who also moonlight as agents, do you think? Ben Affleck: I think there are probably quite a few, yeah. I think Hollywood is probably full of CIA agents, and we just don't know it. And I wouldn't be surprised at all to discover that it's extremely common. While Argo depicted a CIA operation with goals most people would applaud, do you genuinely believe this is the bulk of what the CIA does with its Hollywood and other domestic operations? Most of the time, they're engaged in much more nefarious operations, which they hope will never be depicted in a Hollywood movie. Although the 1980 operation to extract our personnel from Tehran was a noble endeavor with a successful outcome, the agency still didn't publicly acknowledge the operation until 1997. If you want a more current example of offers being made to powerful individuals by shady characters to change their behavior, you need look no further than the example of Carrie Lake. I count myself among those who believe Lake won the governorship of Arizona and that she has been one of the most effective critics of corrupt practices in our election system. In other words, she is an enemy of the deep state. And how might the deep state respond to Lake's challenge? This is from a July 1st, 2023 Breitbart article about her book, Unafraid, Just Getting Started, and Possible Plans to Run for the U.S. Senate. Breitbart News Washington Bureau Chief Matthew Boyle asked Lake, last year's Republican gubernatorial nominee in Arizona, if she was considering another bid for office in the Grand Canyon state. Lake, who had the backing of the MAGA coalition and is challenging her razor-thin election loss, said she is thinking of another run, though she emphasized she has not given up on her legal battle. Politics is gross. It's a slimy business. But I think we need real people to be in it. And so I am contemplating running for office again, Lake said. I want everyone out there to know we have filed a notice of appeal on our case. We're not giving up on securing our elections and reforming our elections, and we're going to work through the court system. I may run for Senate. I'm considering that, she said. Carrie Lake is a fighter, and we need more people like her in politics. While the Breitbart article focused mostly on her upcoming book and possible Senate run, there was a section of the interview that drew my attention, as it confirmed much of what I believe is genuinely hidden from the public. Lake, a former Fox 10 Phoenix anchor who left the world of news because of left-wing political bias, asserted she had been approached by a high-profile person attempting to bribe her to stay out of politics. The interaction happened when she was writing Unafraid after the election. Originally, I was going to name the book, I was going to title it unafraid. And then I had a pretty high-profile person come to my door and offer me money to put my movement on hold and my political career on hold. Offered me a cushy job, nice paycheck, position on a board, and I said, "Are you kidding me? I left a cushy job. I'm not motivated by money," Lake recounted. And then the conversation turned, "Well, what would it take for you not to run for office again, at least until after 2024? And I thought, "Oh my gosh, this is the kind of stuff of movies. If these people, the political elite, want me out of politics so badly that they're willing to bribe me, that tells me I need to stay in." So that's when I decided to add the subtitle, "Just Getting Started," just to give them a little bit of fear. "Because I'm just getting started," she laughed. I've heard so many variations of this story from different people, with no connection to each other, that I simply consider it part of the operating system of the deep state. Just like a criminal profiler will eventually understand the habits of a serial killer and predict his next move. One needs to have a strong moral compass, and I believe, a deep faith in God, to overcome the obstacles these demons will place in front of good and honest people. I was told other things by people who live in this world. Once, I was flown by a pilot on a private jet, who'd been the pilot for the head of a major entertainment company, and he had a story he wanted to tell me. He said he was told to simply fly to a specific set of coordinates. "There's nothing there," the pilot said. "It's just ocean." "No, just fly there," the pilot was told. "It's a private island. It's 7 stars. No homeless, just billionaires." That's the level of control these people have. This wasn't Epstein's island. It's another one that they don't want you to know about. I guarantee you that every famous person you've heard about has had this kind of approach made to them. Joe Rogan hasn't told me directly that these speeches have been made to him, but he's come close enough when we've had dinner and I've broached the subject. He said something like, "Screw them," and it appeared to me that he's heard the same speeches I have. I remember when I was in Hollywood that I had some people warn me, "You think Hollywood is cool, Alex? What are you going to do when you're at some party and they bring in some 16-year-old girl and start having sex with her? That's why you shouldn't go to that party tonight. This place is dangerous, and you need to watch out." That's the kind of stuff I've had prominent people in Hollywood tell me about. There were many who avoided it, like the Sheen family. They were good, strong Catholics, and although Charlie has had his share of troubles, he is not part of that Hollywood. I grew up Christian and believe in God, but frankly, claims of devil worship and secret ceremonies sounded like something from the Middle Ages. When as a teenager I saw rock and roll groups emulating satanic themes, I imagined it was just something they were doing to shock the public and drive record sales. However, as I began to learn more, I saw that Hollywood, and possibly other groups of powerful individuals, was setting up what could only be considered an alternative belief system to Christianity. I can't prove to you there is a devil, but these people believe it, and they want to dedicate themselves to this false god. I saw this alternative belief system when I infiltrated the Bohemian Grove in California in 2000, as reported by the Washington Post in a 2023 article. Bohemian Grove has all the hallmarks of an eyebrow raiser. The men's only retreat in Sonoma County has a massive owl statue, a reported history of public urination, mysterious ceremonies, and a top-secret guest list that has included presidents, wealthy businessmen, international power players, and other newsmakers. The cremation event in particular has drawn scrutiny, especially since InfoWars founder Alex Jones snuck into the encampment and filmed the ceremony in 2000. Mainstream journalists are also fans of trying to pierce the veil. A Washington Post reporter was escorted back to his car after trying to get in. A writer for Spy magazine snuck in for several days in the 1980s. And a Vanity Fair contributing editor was arrested for trespassing. Perhaps appropriate for a campground that has been called exclusive, mysterious, and the very definition of the Old Boys Club, Bohemian Grove has been a magnet for conspiracy theorists on the right and protesters on the left, though the demonstrations have shriveled in recent years. In Hollywood in the mid-2000s, I was a hero to the left for having infiltrated the secretive summer gatherings at the Bohemian Grove. But during my time in Hollywood, I was being told that the entertainment industry was similarly compromised by powerful forces. And in 2005, in the wake of the recent presidential election between George W. Bush and John Kerry, people were interested in my investigation of the Skull and Bones Society at Yale University, which both men had attended. This is from the opening of an article about Yale's most secretive society. Legend has it that in 1918, under the cover of darkness, Yale student Prescott S. Bush dug up the grave of Geronimo. Bush, along with several co-conspirators, took the skull and two bones of the famed Apache leader back to Yale University in New Haven, Connecticut, where they've been on display at the headquarters of one of America's most mysterious secret societies. Prescott Bush, the father of President George H.W. Bush and grandfather of George W., is a bonesman. He, along with his cohorts, was a member of an elite club at Yale University known as the Skull and Bones Society. Throughout history, some of the most prominent American figures have been bonesmen, handpicked members of Yale's undergraduate class, selected to join the ranks of elite students. In addition to the Bushes, both H.W. and W. followed in Prescott's footsteps during their time at the university. Members have included hundreds of government officials, such as former Secretary of State John Kerry, as well as members of the entertainment industry, such as actor Paul Giamatti. It doesn't take much sleuthing to find connections between some of the most powerful members of our country and these secret societies. I'm not even opening the can of worms regarding U.S. Senator Prescott Bush and how he may have been one of the main architects of handing our government over to the intelligence agencies during the Eisenhower administration, which was the very thing Eisenhower tried to warn us against in his farewell military-industrial complex speech. Does your head start to spin when you fully understand how certain families have been close to the center of our governmental power for decades? The article continued. The initiation process of the society has long been shrouded in secrecy, driving many to believe that it involves occult practices, black magic, and even animal sacrifices. Like all societies at the university, of which there are seven, the Skull and Bones Society have a headquarters. Known colloquially as the Tomb, the Skull and Bones Hall is a Gothic, windowless building on High Street, just off campus, where the members can gather for meetings and events. It is also the rumored resting place of the bones of Geronimo, after being stolen by Prescott Bush, as well as the skulls of former President Martin Van Buren and Mexican revolutionary Pancho Villa. I read widely and then compare what I read with what I understand from other sources, I like things to add up and have some sort of narrative logic. However, I also understand that just because something makes sense doesn't make it true. But I do believe that things that are true make sense, and we can understand it if we have all the facts. Consider this passage from the same article. Some claim that the group was behind the Kennedy assassination, that they were responsible for creating the nuclear bomb, that they are sponsored and influenced by the Illuminati, and even that they control the entire Central Intelligence Agency. However, the theories, as off-kilter as some of them may sound, aren't really that off-base when considering the members. At different points throughout history, Bonesmen have had control over the fortunes of the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, and the Fords. They've also had members rise through the ranks and obtain high offices in the Council on Foreign Relations, powerful media corporations such as Time, and, of course, three presidents of the United States, William Howard Taft, in addition to the Bushes. In fact, during the 2004 presidential election, both the Republican and Democratic nominees, George W. Bush and John Kerry, were Skull and Bones members. I'm not in a position to tell you what's true about that passage, but when I compare that with what I've heard from other sources, I tend to believe in the general thrust of the article. Skull and Bones is not just some social club. It's the collegiate farm league for those who want to run the world. I'm comfortable admitting I may have some of the details wrong. When the powerful hide what they're doing from us, is it our fault if we make a few mistakes? But do you understand why I use a similar analytical framework, whether I'm looking at groups like the World Economic Forum, the Trilateral Commission, the Club of Rome, the Bilderberg Group, or the World Health Organization? Anytime I see the combination of power and secrecy, I get nervous. But the answer isn't to be frightened and hide from the facts. We just need to draw these villains out into the light, where the rest of us can see them clearly for the devils they are.